using regional prevalence monitoring data to evaluate chlamydia rescreening and reinfection rates at infertility prevention project screening sites.
Good morning. I want to talk to you about a project that we did with my collaborator, Shanna Cash, at Healthcare Education and Training, to look at using IPP regional prevalence monitoring data to evaluate both rescreening and reinfection rates. So a little bit of background. A number of studies have shown that women infected with chlamydia come back reinfected within around 3 to 6 months. And so in the 2010 treatment guidelines, CDC recommended that, and there's actually two recommendations, one on page 44, which says that women with chlamydia should be retested within 3 to 6 months after their treatment, regardless of whether their sex partners have been treated. And then on page 46, there's another recommendation talking about, and interestingly enough, for both men and women, but primarily chlamydia-infected women and men should be retested approximately 3 months after treatment, again, regardless of whether their partners have been treated, and that if not retested at 3 months, then any time that they come in to your clinic within a year, they should be retested. So in our study, we had basically two objectives. One is to look at, could we use regional chlamydia prevalence data to evaluate rescreening and reinfection rates? And one of the problems is that having a unique client identifier is not part of the core data variables that are collected at IPP sites. And I think the other thing is that it's kind of promising in the sense that as we're getting all this data for private providers and healthcare reform, until probably down the road, it's going to be a while before there's an individual client identifier. So could we use a surrogate that would help us track it? And then once we did that, could we use that data to be able to start collecting reinfection rates and rescreening rates to then, looking at client demographics to improve performance? So the first thing we did is in 2009 we got our states together, and that's Region 5 is Illinois, Indiana, Michigan, Minnesota, Ohio, and Wisconsin, which are both very highly urbanized states but have a big rural population also. So we have a good variation of population size and density. And we got all the six states to agree that they would collect or develop a unique identifier, giving a couple of methods. One or two states had a unique identifier that was generated either at the screening site or a laboratory. Most of the states did not, and we tested a variable by taking the client's first name, last name, date of birth, concatenating that, and then using an auto number generated field and creating a match, we're able to create a unique identifier. Because one of the issues is that although the states collect the client name, that data is not provided at the regional level because of confidentiality. So the issue was, could we at the regional level create that? And so we actually were able to create a unique identifier. And we've done some tests before using case record data to indicate that basically using a name about probably 99% of the time, people usually came back to the same provider. So one of the issues was, if people go to different providers and have different unique client identifiers, can you track those people? So by September of 2011, we were able to collect data from four of the six states that were able to do this. And one of the things that we did is we at the regional level provided technical assistance to the states, because it's really those six states that create that unique client identifier and then strip out the name when they provide that data to us at the regional level. So what did we find? We have a fairly robust screening program in Region 5. We test about 500,000 clients a year. About 70% are women. And during, we took a time period, July through December of 2009, about 113,000 women were screened. Overall positivity of that population is about 7.3%. And then we followed those women for the next 12 months and found that about 36.7% of those females did come back in for rescreening, and about 10% were reinfected. So breaking the data down by a few demographics, first thing we looked at is by age group. And within the first set of bars is basically a month to 6 months out, and about 27% of women under 26, which is our target population, did come back in for rescreening. A little interestingly enough, we actually had a little bit higher rate among women 30 plus versus 26 to 29. And those are people probably where there was some, because you know we do promote our sites to try to get women back in. So that's kind of our background rate of you know how we're currently performing. So about a third of the of our high-risk clients are coming back in within the 3 to 6 month really target period. And then during the next intervening 6 months, about anywhere from 9 to 10% of women are coming back in to get rescreened, probably because they're symptomatic or for some other reason. And so overall, looking at the you know a year's worth of data, about 37.4% of women under 26 are coming back. Again, a little bit higher rate of women over 30 are coming back. And we don't know if that's an aberration of just this one time period, so we have to track it over a couple time periods before we see if that's a, you know, a persistent issue. Looking at the reinfection rate, about 10% overall of females did come back reinfected. Obviously, as expected, the higher, almost twice a higher rate among females under 26 versus over 26. 10.7, and to put it in perspective, we also looked at males coming back for rescreening, and the reinfection rate was about 8% for males coming back. We then looked at it by race and ethnicity, and as you can see, it varies anywhere from 18.8% for American Indians up to about 43% for people that we unknown ethnicity and race, with African Americans having the highest rescreening rate, which is kind of encouraging, looking at that that's a high target population with high infection rates, that we're able to get African Americans back in at that high rate. And then looking at it by reinfection rates, again, it varied from 5.4% for Asian Pacific Islanders up to 12% for African Americans. And then we looked at it by provider type, and in Region 5, we're very fortunate that we've gone beyond family planning and STD clinics and collect data from a number of providers. And looking at the percent rescreened, and I think one of the things that's kind of encouraging as we move into healthcare reform is you can see that community health centers had some of the highest rates, almost 30% of their clients were rescreened. Obviously, school-based clinics and adolescent teen clinics had the highest rates, you know, probably primarily because they're captive populations. They're already in schools. It's very easy for that school nurse to go out and grab that kid and bring him back in. Whereas STD clinics probably had some of the lowest rates at about 20%, and family planning clinics had higher rates at about, 28-30%. And then looking at reinfection rates, again, as expected, school-based clinics and adolescent teen clinics were, again, adolescents are the most prevalent population, did have the highest reinfection rate. So it was over 20% for school-based clinics and almost 16% for adolescent clinics. And then just a little bit of variation by state. You can see Illinois had about a 28% rescreening rate versus Wisconsin had the highest rate, and then Minnesota had a rate of about 15%. So there is a big variation among states. So conclusions and implications. Obviously, from our study, we showed that you can use prevalence data to calculate rescreening and reinfection rates, and you don't have to have a unique client identifier, that you can do this by generating your own identifier. We do think that these unique client IDs, although not perfect, and one of the limitations is obviously if the name is misspelled or somebody changes their name or they use a different name when they go into a clinic, we can't identify them. But again, looking at least when we compared it to our case data, we think it's a very highly sensitive and specific method, although not perfect. Rescreening and reinfection rates were highest among females. And among females, age under 26, African American, and screened at school-based clinics gave us the highest rates. Because of our efforts, clients are more likely to rescreen within 3 to 6 months versus at the from 6 months to a year, and that's because of our efforts are to try to get them in within around 3 months. One of the things that we know is that programs do need technical assistance in developing computer programs to calculate rescreening and reinfection rates. How you calculate those rates, it's fairly complex, and I think one of the things that would be helpful would be for CDC or others to generate some methodologies that we could provide states, especially as we transition and have states provide data, is that we sort of lay out what are the parameters on how do you calculate rescreening rates and how do you calculate reinfection rates, because there's a lot of issues. How do you count somebody? Is it the first test that they come back? Is it all their tests? So there's a number of issues. Obviously, it's important for healthcare providers, especially as we move into healthcare reform, to routinely collect and evaluate data. So one of the things we as programs will need to do, especially as we move into our role of assessment and assurance, is to help train providers how to collect that data and how to analyze that data, or help, get that data that we can then provide them with those rates. Again, not only to improve performance, but ultimately to reduce infertility and sequelae, which is what we're all about. So I want to acknowledge first my co-collaborator, Shanna Cash, and Steve Holmes, who helped do the data analysis, and then most importantly, the people that work in our IPPs, our state coordinators, data managers, and the people that work in the clinics. Thank you.